Okay, we are now back on the record. It is 11:15, just after our mid-morning break. And I think we were continuing with the direct testimony of Mr. Schramm.
Yes,
Okay.
thank you. Hello again, Mr. Schramm.
Good morning.
Good morning. So I want to shift to asking you to respond to some of the appeal issues that we've heard. And I'm going to be tracking a bit the points in the rebuttal exhibit that Ms. Herstein prepared, that I believe is Exhibit A6. So in comment two of that exhibit, in testimony yesterday, I think we heard Ms. Herstein say that essentially the proposed hotel is not a good fit for either the all suites or limited service hotel category, and therefore additional local data needs to be collected for you to reach reliable conclusions about parking demand. Did you hear that testimony?
I did,
How
yes.
would you respond to that?
Well, I would disagree professionally. I mean, for all the reasons that I testified to before, as part of my 30 years of experience in practice, relying on the IT manuals, when we take a closer look at the different hotel categories, I have a very high level of confidence that what is described in ITE as a limited service hotel, very closely, if not identically, describes what's being proposed by WoodSpring Suites Hotel. So, in this case, I don't see the need to collect existing data. In my experience, where I have and our company has collected local data, it's when you have a land use proposal that doesn't fit very well or at all with any of the land use categories in the IT manual. In this case, because what's being proposed fits very well with the description of Land Use Code 312, it would be appropriate to utilize the data from ITE, and no need to supplement that with additional data collection.
Mr. Schramm, as you described earlier, you did collect additional local data about WoodSpring Suites for purposes of trip generation on an earlier occasion. Isn't that right?
Yes, we did. That was my testimony.
And so why wouldn't you do the same thing here when it comes to parking?
Yeah. Well, I'll stand by what I said before. The other thing to understand is the reason that we did it for the WoodSpring Suites Hotel is because they believed that in terms of the trip generating characteristics, that their trips would actually be lower. So we did it not only to help them understand and substantiate their opinion, but also for the purpose of making a reasonable argument of paying appropriate traffic impact fees that are commensurate or comparable to what the trip generation rates are. So the purpose there was not to collect data because it wasn't specific. It was is for the purpose of identifying a appropriate impact. So for that reason, and then also because I believe the description of the categories in IT are representative here, I didn't believe that additional data was necessary to estimate what we believe IT already provides.
Do you believe that additional data that you had collected was necessary for the TIA for the trip generation analysis that you conducted here for this study?
Do I think it was necessary? I feel like it was appropriate because we had collected it for the other purpose, and I think it was relevant. I didn't think it was needed. In fact, the data we collected for trip generation for the hotel actually showed less trips than what ITE indicated. And if I'm being fair, I think data collected for WoodSpring Suites Hotel would, similar to the trip generation being lower, would probably have a lower parking generation rate as well. But again, I felt like conservatively ITE was still the best representation.
And so, maybe just to ask the same question worded differently, Mr. Schramm, had you not collected the specific local WoodSprings data earlier, and then you were starting to prepare the TIA for this project, would you have been comfortable preparing that TIA based on the ITE predictions only?
Yes, I would have.
Anything else you want to say on that subject or what you heard
Yeah,
from?
I would say just to help can sort of confirm that opinion of mine. The reason that I rely on the IT data is because when we did our supplemental work, and I know we haven't, I haven't specifically described it or testified, but it's in the record. When we did our supplemental traffic analysis, we used the latest version of the IT manual for the trip generation, and not the previous studies that we did to represent that I believe the IT data was appropriate use.
Thank you. I'm looking at comment three in the rebuttal exhibit A6, and that states essentially that, as we talked about earlier, the possibility of future occupancy in the office buildings and the building renovations at the credit union mean that current peak demand is understated. Did that testimony that we heard yesterday change any of your conclusions about the ability of the business park to accommodate future parking demand?
No, it wouldn't change any of my conclusions.
And did you understand that to, in Ms. Herstein's analysis, indicate that the built business park would not be able to accommodate future parking demand?
I did not hear her say that it would not be able to. In fact, I think she said, and her documentation shows that it would be able to.
In comment four, the exhibit points out, as we looked at earlier, that the definition of limited service hotel indicates that a limited service hotel might have a small food pantry, a breakfast buffet, an order at the counter restaurant, and that since our proposed hotel does not have any of those, that further supports the need to collect local data. Could you please respond to that comment?
Yeah, again, professionally speaking, I would disagree. I don't believe that those descriptions of a that you cited there, I could look them up, but just the limited food services and that description doesn't sway me professionally that the IT data isn't appropriate. Even within different hotels, I would expect that the varying, degrees of services might change slightly. I think the bigger picture issue, or the bigger picture characteristics of, no restaurant, no meeting space, was representative. And that's the key here, is that we have a land use, we have data points, we have a description that very closely resembles what's being proposed. And just because it may not have one particular element, to me, wouldn't suggest that the data is irrelevant or not, or that additional data is necessary. I believe there's plenty of appropriate data to represent what's being proposed.
And Mr. Schramm, as that comment indicated, since the definition of limited service hotel indicates that there could be a small food service amenity, but since our hotel will not have any such amenity, what would that indicate to you about the likely direction of parking demand for this proposed hotel?
Well, if I had to make a prediction, I would say that the fact that if a it may have, but it doesn't have, would suggest that parking generation could actually be lower.
Comment five notes the net 91 parking stall increase, which, as you acknowledged before, you agree with. Is that right?
Yes, I agree.
In comment six, I think addresses a point that we heard some testimony about. So I want to ask you. I think the overall thrust of it was that hotel guests are likely to see circulating around the credit union, which we're about to talk about in a lot of detail, as an inconvenient way to go. And so rather than using the rear parking lot, they are likely to park on the south side of the hotel, which is on the north side of the office building property. Did you hear that testimony?
I did.
And could you respond to that assertion, please?
Yeah. Well, let me first state that I agree with the assessment, not only from Ms. Herstein, but also a couple of the other witnesses, that people will park in the location that's most convenient for them and most practical. There's no disputing that. What I would disagree with is if in a scenario where a hotel guest were trying to find parking in the front, if they could not find convenient parking, that they would therefore park south of the building and by the office park. Yeah, there may be occasionally a vehicle that parks there, but I would expect that hotel guests are much more likely to park in the rear of the building, which is identified for hotel parking.
And can you say more about why that is, Mr. Schramm? And when you're saying identified for hotel parking, I think another theme that we heard in testimony was there's not a specific, enforceable requirement that says hotel guests have to park there.
Yeah. Well, there's not currently. I mean, it doesn't mean that one couldn't be provided, but I would say, in my experience as a hotel user and just being around sites that have hotels, my expectation would be that upon check-in and a guest checks in, that they would be alerted, advised, described that that if you can't find parking conveniently here in the front, we have parking in the back. And they would be, I would expect that they would, it would be described as how to get there. And so I guess that's just an assumption I would have, and actually an expectation, that, that would occur. The other reason that I would say that a hotel guest is more likely to park in the back than south of the hotel parcel is because the type of hotel this is, and the guests that they typically have, which are, a lot of extended stay guests, are people that are parking and returning to the site if they do leave the site and come back. And they'll be familiar once they have done it the first time, right? If they have parked in the back or couldn't find parking in the front, decide to park in the back, I think they're going to find it convenient. There's parking right up in front of the building. There's a building entry there with a key card. I believe not only will that be more convenient than parking south on the and other business park parking stalls, but I think just the repetition of a returning guest will see the convenience of it, and they will know after they've done it the first time if they're returning that parking in the back is more convenient.
Yeah, anything else that you'd like to say on that point, Mr. Schramm, in response to what you heard?
Yeah, I think in looking just maybe as an additional point, when I in response to the testimony I heard and just kind of looking at the site plan again and thinking about how a hotel guest would return, especially returning guests, when I look at the site plan in particular, and I have an awareness of generally the site plan has identified a landscape area and some trees and some basically some buffer between the hotel and the drive aisle and the office buildings to the south. I think it's going to become clear, in my opinion, for a guest that that is less convenient, especially if I have a luggage or I'm carrying things back to my room, that I don't have a clear path to get from that parking area into the hotel building. I just think that just based on the circulation pattern and the way the landscaping is intended to provide the buffer, I just don't see that as a convenient and way that a guest would want to park there to enter the building for the hotel.
And is that landscape buffer that you're just describing shown here on this is page one of exhibit F31?
Yeah, that looks like it. You can see some of the trees, and if you zoomed in, I mean, you can. Again, this is just my professional opinion, having kind of looked at the site plan and design. You can see there's sidewalk and a paved path around the building, right? So you can, and also in front of the building, so you can, more pretty easily and conveniently walk from a parking area right into the building on the south border, let's call it, at least the border between the parcel and the parking to the south. You can see there's no continuous path. You see landscaping. I think there's some notes in there that call out the type of landscaping. Again, I'm not trying to represent myself as a civil engineer, but if I remember right, there's a little bit of grade along the site from running from north to south. So there may also be some grade separation or some, limitation that might limit someone trying to cut through or walk through a landscape area that may have some elevation change too. So again, I offer it as my opinion as to why I believe, hotel parking, and if they can't find a spot in the front, is more likely to use the hotel parking in the back than it would the parking south of the building.
Thank
And
you.
that's exhibit F31, correct? Did I
Yes.
hear that? Yep.
F-31. And I guess actually just Mr. Schramm, I think you described this, but on this page one of exhibit F-31, the area you're talking about is at the lower left of this page. That's showing what's labeled as a separation buffer.
I guess the lower half left, yeah, where you see the big circles, which are the trees, and I think it's yeah, it's listed as a, yeah, I call out KCC set 17.500.027 separation buffer, and it describes some of the elements that'll be included there. Yeah, it's based on my review of that. That's what my testimony is based
Thank
on.
you. You also mentioned a moment ago there was some discussion about different kinds of parking management plans. I guess can you describe what that is in general? What are strategies you can use in that area?
I would say, speaking generally first, a management plan is anything that directs people to do something that they wouldn't normally do, or just as part of a normal operating procedure, right? So if you're managing something, you're directing people or advising people to do something you want them to do. So it could management plans could take on a variety of things. Specifically, a parking management plan. Some of the elements that you might find in a parking management plan is designated parking spaces, either with signs or striping that, you know, say who can park here, who can't, time of day limitations like loading zones, you know, you only these types of cars or check-in or something like that. Other parking management strategies could be identifying where, say, employees might be required to park off-site or in a certain area, managing employees to park somewhere else. Or directing or asking employees to park in a certain parking area, for example, trying to preserve parking out in front of a building for a clinic for patients to come in conveniently. A management practice might be to ask employees of that building to park in the back or a different area to, in order to keep open some stalls in the front. If that's what you're asking, those would be some ideas of how parking management might work.
Thank you. And if the different users of the business park now or in the future after the construction of the hotel were to identify a need for such or a desire for such management strategies and agree to implement them, are there some that you think could be workably implemented on this site?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think there are several things that I would keep in mind that and most of which have to do with understanding the needs, let's just call it needs of your neighbor, right? A management plan, in my experience, typically has different parties who have different interests or entities. And so a management plan not only helps to ensure that the people, right, using the parking, but also, you know, the people who manage the parking are, you know, reach some sort of an agreement or understanding of how to best operate a parking area. So in this particular case, I can think of a couple things. One would be to sign or stripe or allocate stalls for a certain use or a certain time of day. It may make sense if two parties agree to allocate certain parking stalls for certain use. Like, let's say at a credit union, we want these stalls to be for credit union users from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. That would be a reasonable parking management strategy. Another one might be to identify a parking area for employees. In a case like this, where you have a business park that has higher parking need during the day, let's just call it 9 to 5, right? Well, the parking needs for a hotel are very low. They're the kind of the lower part during the day. And so at night is when the hotel needs more parking. So a parking strategy to account for that would be, you know, during the day when a operating business may need more parking, you may have a parking management arrangement where a certain group or amount of employees might be asked to or required to park, say, in the bank, I'm sorry, in the hotel parking, the back parking. We know during the day, at least my experience has been during the day, the hotel, it does not have a high parking demand. And so I would expect the back parking to be relatively, you know, underutilized. So that would be a good candidate, say, for an adjacent office or credit union to have some of their employees park adjacent in the hotel parking. Then when their business is done as employees, they leave, that hotel parking becomes available for returning guests. So those are a couple of examples that I think could easily and appropriately be implemented here.
Do you think, Mr. Schramm, is it your opinion that any of those types of strategies need to be implemented, must be implemented in order to avoid significant adverse environmental impacts from the hotel, or otherwise to demonstrate code compliance or adequate on-site parking for the business park?
Yeah, I've thought about this. And it's an important question. I think all things considered, and I know we haven't talked about the circulation yet, but just considering the amount of work that we've done to make sure that we have identified what we really believe the peak parking to be on the hotel, the fact that I feel very comfortable that the IT data suggests that the proposed parking for the hotel will accommodate an average and even an 85th percentile, parking generation rate. I believe the hotel has enough parking to serve its demands, and therefore, I don't see a need for parking management strategies to address it. They would be nice. It certainly would be helpful, but because of that, I don't think adding the hotel for the reason of parking would create a significant adverse impact.
Thank you. I wanted to ask you briefly about, and I'll pull it up. I'm on page 9 of Exhibit A2. So this is Ms. Herstein's original memo, and this is PDF page 19 of the compiled appellant exhibit documents. Do you see this paragraph that begins with the statement the hotel plans do not show a porte cochere or separated guest loading area?
Yes, I see that.
Do you see that later in the paragraph it says the design should designate short-term check-in and loading spaces and then deduct those from the general parking supply?
Yes, I see that statement.
Could you respond to that assertion and would the inclusion of such spaces have an effect on your predictions here?
Well, let me start with your last question. I don't believe if a certain number of stalls that were allocated for loading or check-in were deducted. My experience would maybe it would be a handful of stalls for that it needed. That wouldn't change what I believe are the results of both her analysis and our analysis that there's adequate parking supply to for the hotel and the existing uses. So that would be that question. In terms of her recommendation that there be. Well, let me just take it piece by piece. I agree. There's no porte cochere or clearly separated loading and unloading areas. I don't believe the site plan specifies yet the location or number of check-in stalls. My expectation, having worked on other WoodSpring Suites and other hotels, is my expectation is there would be a reasonable number of check-in stalls. And then the last thing is the suggestion that those stalls, if identified, should be removed from the parking calculation count, I believe is wrong. I mean, I just think that's it's not consistent with IT practice. Again, when ITE data is collected for hotels, in my experience, in the description of how data is collected, an analyst collects how many cars are parked at any particular time period divided by the number of rooms. There's no distinction that the number of parked cars are, the number of loading stalls or check-in stalls are separated somehow is not evidence in the data. It is a total parking count. Number of stalls, whether those are loading, check-in, or what, or just general hotel parking stalls, what's calculated in the data or what's provided in the data is a total of stalls. So it would not be appropriate to re reduce or remove those from a parking count calculation.
Thank you. Mr. Schramm, next I want to ask you about a couple of code provisions that are the subject of some appeal claims, and I will share the text of the code from the county website, if that's all right, just so we're looking at them. you're seeing that, Mr. Schramm, there's a claim about section 17.490.020C, which is labeled here joint use of facilities. Do you see that?
I see that, yes.
And do you see the first sentence of this refers to the off-street parking requirements of two or more uses being satisfied by the same parking space used
Yes.
jointly? And we are not relying on that provision. Is that correct?
I'm not relying on that provision to, in my de determination that there is adequate parking provided to meet the demands of the hotel.
Thank you. And then going down to the next section of the code, I'm looking at 17.490.030A1, and this is talking about the deviation from required spaces. And this is the section that is authorizing the reduction from the standard code requirement of one stall per bedroom for a hotel slash motel use to what here is proposed as 110 parking stalls. Is that right?
That's correct. It's my understanding.
And not asking you again to speak as a lawyer, Mr. Schramm, but based on your experience looking at parking requirements and your understanding of the text here about the unusual nature of the proposed use and whether the parking required by this section exceeds any likely need, is it your opinion that this proposal complies with that requirement, or that the deviation is authorized by that?
I would say yes, in my experience, given that this section, and I think this happened yesterday to the one of the witness, this examiner. I'm looking at a larger screen so I can read the text, just right above me. But I would say under the, in the context of a deviation, so if there's a need for a reconsideration of the required number of parking stalls, this my interpretation of this section is that the director may authorize a reduction. If they're unusual, if they're due to an unusual nature of the proposed use. And I would say what for what's being proposed, I would say yes. And then the reason that I would say yes is because what's important to distinguish between what is required. So what's required here is what the city, or I'm sorry, the county code requires. So the county code requires one parking stall per room. For a general hotel, the only category that the county establishes a required parking rate is for a category they call hotel slash motel. As we know, and as I know based on my prior testimony, there are different types of hotels. Different hotels have different characteristics, trip generation and parking characteristics. The fact that the county does not have separate categories for the different hotel types, general hotel, compared to an all suites hotel, compared to a limited service hotel, is the reason that I would say that this would apply to an unusual circumstance or unusual nature. Again, my own professional perspective on this, because the what is needed for parking at a general hotel is different from the IT data based on the description than what is necessary just provide adequate parking for a limited service hotel. So it's for that reason that I would say that the unusual nature would indicate that a need to bring in data specifically for a limited service hotel. And that's where I would bring in ITE to compare and show that we don't need the site doesn't need to provide one stall per room. It's more parking than's necessary. And so what's necessary is what meets demand. And so that's where I would say in this case, it would meet the what I would interpret to be the unusual nature to justify a deviation.
And would you agree, I think as you were just saying, Mr. Sherm, that it is reasonable that the parking that would be required by this section exceeds any likely need for this proposed hotel?
Yeah, can you ask that again?
Yes, I'm pretty much just asking if this second part of the phrase is it is reasonable that the parking required by this section exceeds any likely need as applied to this hotel. Is that what you think is reasonable to conclude?
Again, I guess I'm struggling with the question a little bit.
That is entirely my fault. I apologize. Is it reasonable, Mr. Schramm, to think that 122 parking stalls exceeds any likely parking need for the proposed hotel?
Yeah, I don't believe that 122 parking stalls are needed to serve the needs to the parking demand of the hotel to accommodate it.
And do you expect that the likely need of this hotel will be accommodated by 110 parking stalls?
Yes, I do.
Great. Anything else you'd like to say about this deviation before I move on?
Only to maybe reference back for the record that as part of our supplemental analysis, I did provide a section in there that talked about some of the reasons, some of which I just already said in my testimony here, why I believe a deviation and a request for a reduction of parking is justified. And most of those items in the supplemental report are some of the reasons that I just stated here.
Thank you. I guess, oh, also, Mr. Sherman, I wanted to ask the last sentence of this section references public transit availability. And as shown in your TIA, this hotel site is adjacent to bus stops. Is that right?
Yeah, there's existing transit service adjacent, right out, right next to the site.
And would you expect that to have any effect on parking demand?
I would say that based on my experience in understanding this area and the fact that hotel guests tend to be auto-driven, that I wouldn't expect that transit service would have much of an impact. It may have a little bit, certainly possible. It's more likely that maybe a staff person might use transit that could, help reduce the need for parking, but I wouldn't rely upon public transit to be a significant element of utilization for this particular site and location.
Thank you. I want to ask you just a few more questions about parking, Mr. Schramm, before we move on. In your supplemental report, you also included a comparison to the previous retail use. And I'm looking at the bottom of page 4 of Exhibit B5. And maybe just for efficiency's sake, I'll ask, this is a comparison to the parking demand for the current hotel, as compared to the parking that would have been required if the retail use that was depicted in the 2004 and 5 Business Park site plan, if that was what was now being constructed. Is that right?
Yeah, it was just simply a way of acknowledging or describing that the prior, what was previously, I don't know, can I say approved? What was previously proposed on the parcel was a retail use. And this was my intention here was just to do a comparison. We did also a trip generation comparison, but a comparison of what the parking demands would be for what's currently proposed as a hotel, how that would compare to the parking demands if it were the prior retail use that
And you did
was
that,
identified.
comparison based on the square footage of the retail that was originally proposed, but based on the current edition of the ITE manual. Is that right?
That's right. The parking generation is based on the not while it's parking generation is based on per room for the hotel, the parking generation for a retail use is based on the square footage. And yes, I use the most recent edition, the sixth edition of the parking generation manual for that.
And looking at PDF 21 of this exhibit B5, can you just briefly explain how the hotel and retail use differ with respect to peak business park parking demand?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you were to, maybe it would help me more than people there, but a little zoom in might help a little bit too. But if I'm comparing the columns that have the, I guess would be columns 3 and 4, the column that starts with the number 81 versus a column that starts with 0, what we see here is an hourly characterization or an hourly estimate of parking. And you can see the hotel category. The trend, or I guess the peak parking for the hotel occurs in the evening, as I testify before midnight to 4 a.m. And then gradually, as the day starts, the peak parking demand per hour reduces somewhere in the 30 and then 28, and then keeps reducing, and then at after 5 o'clock it starts to increase again. So that profile is representative of a hotel. The retail profile is almost exactly opposite, and that again has to do with the retail nature of retail stores typically aren't open until 9 a.m. or after, and so you can see the hourly table shows the hourly parking demand of retail increases as the day goes on to a high at 1 p.m. in the midday, and then it starts reducing as retail shops, close for business.
And so, how would the peak business park site-wide parking demand with a retail use compared to the peak business park site-wide parking demand with a hotel?
Well, it'd be different. And the other thing in this particular case, we noted, as I did with the hotel, we layered the hotel on top of the existing business park. By layering the hourly parking demand of the retail on top of the business park, we get a different peak and we get a different parking demand profile. And in fact, the peak now, when we combine existing business park plus retail, the peak would shift to 1 p.m. and the peak parking demand would be 254, which is 11 stalls more than the peak parking demand for the hotel, which occurs between 9 and 11 a.m.
I also want to ask you, Mr. Schramm, at page 9 of this exhibit, B5, what is this document?
This appears to be the site plan that was previously provided when the lot 2 was proposed as a retail use.
And do you see at the top middle left of this document, there's this section called parking table.
Yes, I see that.
And interpreting this graph, do you understand this to be saying that the minimum parking stalls required by code for the anchor retail at that time, or when this was proposed, would have been 117?
Yes, the retail that we just referred to, the 17,600 square feet, the minimum county requirement of 100 for one stall for every 150 square feet will result in a minimum parking requirement of 117 stalls. That's right.
And how many surface parking stalls does this say were proposed to be provided for that retail use in this site plan?
Yeah, in this site plan, what was proposed was only 94. Only I only say only because it's less than what the minimum required, but this the parking provided was 94.
And what
And
exhibit is that again? If you
this I think this graphic appears a few places, but we are on page 9 of exhibit B5 right
All
now.
right, thank you.
Yep. And Mr. Schramm, would you agree with me that 117 minus 94 is 23?
Yeah, that's a difference of 23, yes.
And so would that reflect that according to the original site plan, there were to be 23 fewer stalls provided for the retail than the code would have required on that particular parcel?
Yes, I agree with that.
And how does that compare to the 110 stalls being provided versus the 122 standard code requirement for the current proposed use?
How does it compare? Well, it compares that the, well, maybe ask the question again so I make sure I
It's
answer.
probably needlessly convoluted. The original business park was proposing what essentially would have been a 23 stall deficit below code required parking stalls for retail. Is that right?
Yes.
And the current project is proposing 12 stalls below what would have been required.
Yes, I see what you're saying, and yes, I agree with the math.
And so the current proposal is closer to the code required minimum, standard code required minimum parking than the retail proposal would have been.
Yes, it's less of a deficit. Another way of saying that.
Thank you. And we'll talk a bit more about the original business park proposal in a moment related to circulation, but Mr. Schramm, was any of the information that we just went through comparing parking needs and parking stalls, is any of that necessary to your conclusions that you reached under SEPA or under the code for the proposal today?
No, none of that changes my conclusions.
I guess I'm saying, was any of it did your conclusions that you reached for the TIA, the supplemental analysis, about the sufficiency of parking and SEPA impacts of the current hotel, were you relying on any of the 2005 analysis that had previously been done?
The only thing I was relying upon was the fact that for the purposes of my comparison, it just utilized the same amount of 17,000 square foot of retail. But the comparison and analysis that I did showed even with retail, the peak parking demand of 254 would be accommodated by the current and the proposed parking supply that was previously identified for the site plan with the retail use.
And I guess just to make sure, I'm sorry that I keep needing to reword my questions, Mr. Schramm. I guess there's an appeal claim that sort of the analysis that was done in 2005 was kind of incorporated into the current environmental analysis or relied upon rather than independently collecting data for the current project. And so did you do anything different for your TIA and your analysis of current parking demand? Other than the comparative points that you've just made, did you do anything differently for that than you would normally based on the existence of the 2005 information?
No, I don't believe so.
Thank you. And is there anything else other than what we've talked about that you heard yesterday regarding parking that you'd like to address?
I don't think there's anything new that I would add.
And did anything that you heard from the appellant witnesses or from Ms. Herstein yesterday change your conclusions that we've talked about that there are no significant adverse impacts related to parking and that the hotel can accommodate parking demand?
Is your question whether, I'm sorry, it was a,
Did
could you?
anything you heard yesterday change your conclusions on those points?
Oh, no, nothing changed my conclusions.
Okay. We are now going to shift to talk about circulation and access, Mr. Schramm, and I am going to show you exhibit F20. You can hopefully see that. Did you create this exhibit, Mr. Schramm?
No, I did not.
Does it accurately show, I guess, the paths of vehicular travel through the site that we've been discussing?
Yeah, it looks like it does do a good job of describing the different travel paths for vehicles and pedestrians.
And so what we're going to be talking about here is specifically or primarily the area on the right of this graphic, so the north end of this site where we see red and blue arrows circulating through the parking lot and drive aisles for the credit union, right?
Correct. Yes, I see that.
And similarly to what you were saying about parking earlier, did you do some additional analysis regarding that issue in preparation for this hearing?
Did I do additional analysis? Yes, I would say that at the time we did the traffic impact analysis, we had focused our evaluation on the driveways and the offsite intersections and how we assign those trips. Which we can get into details, but just at a, as a, I think you're asking kind of a big picture question. Did we do anything supplemental? Yes. We conducted additional traffic analysis, as well as parking analysis to better reflect, what we anticipate to be the travel patterns that will be generated and the trips that will be generated by the hotel based on this specific site plan.
Great. And let's go to exhibit Or I guess just to maybe situate us at the start, Mr. Sherman, we may come back to this, but just to make sure it's clear on this graphic, what we're talking about, I guess, would you agree it's broadly summed up by we're looking at the number of vehicles that might come in off the Myrie Road driveway, so the driveway that's kind of at the lower right of this image in exhibit F20, and then would need to access the rear hotel parking lot by going through that credit union drive aisles as we were just describing. That's one set of the trips that we're looking at.
Yes, I understand that that's one of the questions and several of the comments relate to that issue. Yes.
And then we might also be talking about trips that would go through that area because they would be parked in the back parking lot. And for one reason or another, they would want to circulate around to the front, east side, bottom in this graphic, side of the hotel.
Yes, I think that also characterizes the issue. And I think the other key point that is going to be important in this conversation, this discussion, is the configuration and the somewhat restrictive nature of turning movements at the Ridgetop Boulevard driveway. The left turns are not allowed, so that will dictate the travel patterns and circulation that's needed around the credit union.
Thank you. That's helpful to bring up. So on the right side of this graphic, where we see the vertical words Ridgetop Boulevard Northwest, a car that is coming from the west, so from the top of this graphic, could make a right turn into that right-hand driveway.
Correct. I would call that an eastbound right turn from Ridgetop Boulevard into the driveway. That
And
would
then
be.
similarly, a car heading out of that driveway access could turn right and proceed further east on Ridgetop.
Yes, so that particular driveway, a right turning an exiting vehicle must turn right.
Let's jump back to Exhibit B5, your supplemental analysis.
Excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt, but just for the record and my clarification, what was the exhibit number and page number that we were just looking at with the overview of the
Yep,
site?
exhibit F20, and I believe it's just one page. So, Mr. Schramm, I'm now on page 5 of Exhibit B5, your supplemental analysis. And why do we have another section here called trip generation?
Yes. Again, I'm going to thank you for the opportunity to explain the supplemental work that we did. The reason that we have a section called trip generation is because, as I mentioned before, and I'll restate again, the trip generation estimate that we used in the TIA, the February 2025 TIA, was based on the weekday daily and AM peak hour was based on a prior version, prior adopted version of the IT manual. Trip generation manual and the PM peak hour trip generation was based on counts collected at the three other locations. And this section is intended to provide some updated information because it's, supplemental to the work we did previously.
And it looks like here you are saying that, as we talked about for the parking demand section, you selected land use category 312,
That's correct.
limited service hotel. I guess for trip generation purposes, anything you'd want to add to your previous testimony about the change in categories?
I don't know if it's an addition, but it's probably more of a restatement here, since I think it's necessary again, that when we were asked to provide supplemental information in preparation for this, for the appeal and some of the concerns that were raised. Since the time of the February 2025 TAA, the IT manual, trip generation manual, was updated. And so, as part of our documentation of trip generation, we use the most recent version of trip generation for the daily and AM peak hour. Because it represented the land use category that we determined was more appropriate, for this proposed hotel.
And does this lead to a higher estimation of total daily trips for the hotel than you had included in the TIA?
I believe that, yeah, the daily and AM peak hour trip generation documented here is slightly higher than what was documented in the TIA. The PMP car is the same.
And so, in some sense, is this actually a more conservative estimate of trip generation?
As it relates to the daily and the AM peak hour, yes.
Looking first, I think, at table three, does this show, I guess, trip generation hour by hour somewhat similarly to the hourly parking demand tables that we were looking at earlier?
Yes, similar in that. Just like the IT parking generation manual provides parking generation hourly, the IT trip generation manual does the same thing for many, not all, but most of the land use categories. And again, it relies upon the most recent edition for Land Use Code 312. What this table is intended to do is highlight the hourly trip generation for the hotel from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. Data is available for the other hours. We decided to just focus on this time period because it is, during the day when the business park is operating and fully functioning.
And can you explain why that is, given the purpose for which you were preparing this section? Why did you select business hours?
Yeah. Select the business hours because I believe the issue or the question or the concern at hand is the number of hotel trips that are anticipated or estimated to circulate or to need to circulate around the credit union to access the site driveways or the hotel parking area. And so the concern primarily coming from the credit union for the circulation pattern. I'm not suggesting that the other buildings don't have concern, but the circulation concerns around the credit union, we focused during these hours because that it's more representative of when the business park, I'm sorry, the credit union is open. 6 to 9 a.m., the credit union is not open, but we decided to include it because it was, a time period and when they're during the day. So I guess maybe a better way of saying it is we focus these hours because these are the hours when the credit union would be operating.
And so that's by way of looking at the potential for conflicts with other users of the credit union parking lot.
Yes, thank you. That's probably, yeah, a better way of saying why we chose. We wanted to make sure we captured the hours when the credit union was open to estimate how much impact we expect the hotel trips to have.
And so trips, you said, are both entering and leaving. So both trips coming from and trips going to the hotel are captured in these values.
Yes. So, for example, the 28 trips at the bottom of the table from 4 to 5 p.m. that are generated by the hotel, that's a total of entering and exiting trips or in and out trips generated by the hotel.
And Mr. Schramm, do you see the highest value in this column in table three is 35 trips at 7 to 8 a.m.?
Yes, I see that.
And then looking back on the previous page in table two, do you see the AM peak hour prediction is 43?
Yes.
What explains the difference between those two numbers? Is 35 not actually the highest hour?
Yeah, it's a fair question. And thanks again for the opportunity to explain it because it's not a discrepancy. I think the best way to explain it is in the IT trip generation manual, when there's a documentation of the 490 daily trips, so that's 490 daily trips are the number of total entering and exiting trips generated by the hotel over a 24-hour period. When those are broken down by hour in the manual, they're broken down on the hour at the hour, 6 a.m. to 7 a.m., 7 a.m. to 8 a.m., 8 a.m. to 9 a.m.
And that's as shown in table three.
That's what's shown in table three. So the peak, when we consider just the start, the hour by hour is, based on the data that's reflected during that hour. There are times when, and I believe I testified about this before, and I'll repeat it again, when we define trip generation for evaluating, the impact during the highest the impact of a hotel during the peak hours. So that we're capturing the highest four consecutive 15-minute periods. So the 60-minute period between 7 and 9 a.m. that has the highest generation or has the highest number of trips, the greatest number of trips. So I expect what's happening here is the peak hour for the hotel, when you do a more detailed look from the trip generation data, is that the peak hours of the hotel in the AM probably occurred during like a 7:30 to 8:30 a.m. or 7:45 to 8:45 a.m. So it occurred on a time period that didn't capture the specific hour between 7 and 8. So that's why I expect the number 43 is higher than the 35.
Thank you. And then, just to point out, we also have this graph at the bottom of page 5 of Exhibit B5. Does the green line in this graph represent the data that's shown in Table 3, the hourly trip generation data on the next page?
Yes, that graph is intended to show the hourly trip generation for the different uses.
Great. So now let's talk about why you put this data together. So what is the significance, or what did you do with this hourly trip generation data when trying to evaluate the likelihood of impacts on that credit union drive aisle circulation?
Yes. So this is going to take several steps to kind of explain this, but
We'll get through it together.
yeah, I mean, and I will acknowledge right from the start that I understand that the testimony I heard yesterday and some of the concerns from Mr. Herstein and some of the questions that she was asked by the attorneys were that a documentation of our analysis and how we estimated trips and what the impact of circulation was not documented in our supplemental analysis. So this is my opportunity to explain how I arrived at my conclusions. So thank you for the opportunity, and I'm sure you'll have questions as I try to explain it. But I started out, again, as I mentioned before, I started out with, let's first make sure we identify how many trips are being generated by the hotel during any particular hour. And we're going to focus, or I'm going to focus on the 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. because that's the typical hours of the credit union. I understand that from testimony yesterday, one day of the week, the credit union is open at 6 p.m. But for most of the days, and what I'm focusing on and trying to focus myself on what we provide in this table, we start with how much traffic, how many trips in and out is a hotel expected to generate on this site during, the hours between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. So we know from ITE that this site is going to generate somewhere between 17 and 28 trips per hour. Okay, that's the range, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. That's the total number of trips that are coming. That would be generated at the site access points that's coming in and out of the hotel. Then, what we need to understand or try to understand to address some of the concerns is how many, what proportion, what percent of those vehicles that are generated by the hotel, how many are circulating around the credit union? Can we estimate how many are using, are not circulating around? How many are generated at the Ridgetop Boulevard access? How many are just using the Miry Road access? And how many can we estimate are circulating around the credit union? So this is where it takes some professional expertise and estimation. And I'll admit that the estimations that I'm going to describe here are based on my experience and my understanding of how the hotel is designed, with a front parking area that has about a third of the stalls and a back parking area that has two-thirds of those stalls. So I'm not disputing the fact that some of the hotel-generated trips will be will need to and will be circulating around the credit union. The question is how much. I heard testimony yesterday that it wasn't documented. And so here's my opportunity to describe how I've come up with estimates that I described in the sentence below. Basically, we need to understand that two-thirds of the parking area is in the back and one-third is in the front. So using that general proportion, my expectation is that the one-third of the stalls that are parking in the front are most likely to use the driveway or driveways on Myrie. So you come in, that's how you come out. If you're parked there, there's no reason to circulate around the credit union. The two-thirds approximately of, parking stalls and vehicles that are in the back, would either need to use the ridgetop access to enter or exit the driveway, or they'd circulate around. Knowing that the hotel has an extended stay component, a significant extended stay component, that also factors into my estimation. So if we know that many of the, or at least some proportion amount, are people that are returning to the hotel, those people who are familiar with parking in the back may choose out of convenience to go directly there from Bridgetop. I'll cover that in a moment. My expectation also is that if there is parking available in the front and something is coming off Myrie, that they would also park in that area and have no need to circulate around the back. The question is if someone is parking in the back and they want to get out into the street system, we know they cannot exit Ridgetop and turn left. They have to circulate around. So my estimation was of the 2/3 of the parking stalls that are in the back, about half of those would use the Ridgetop driveway. And I think the term I use here is less than half. I'll tell you that, somewhere between a half of the 2/3 are what I would expect would use the Ridgetop Boulevard access because it's convenient. They know where they're going. They're other than when they're exiting the site, other than turning left, which they cannot do, they can turn right and get to almost any other direction they're going. And I believe it's going to be faster for a vehicle exiting the hotel back parking lot to get to the street system by going directly out onto Ridgetop. If they're going anywhere, but if they want to go anywhere but west, it will be a lot slower to have to circulate through a slow parking lot around the credit union to go to Myrie Road. So that's where I come up with about half of the 2/3 that are the vehicles that are parked in the back. And then there's also needs to be some acknowledgement that if there is a hotel guest that's checking in and they are not able to find parking in the front, then they would need to circulate around the back. There's certainly going to be a small proportion of those if they can't find parking that will circulate around the back. So based on that, I'll call it analysis or assessment is why I came up with somewhere in that, my estimate of about less than half of those trips are going to need to circulate around. And when I say half of those trips, half of the 17 to 28. So let's just use for the sake of,
I'll stop you
my,
there, Mr. Shrim, and
okay.
then we'll go on with the math. So I just
Okay.
want to hit some of those points that you just talked about, if you'll tell me if I'm kind of rewording these appropriately. So looking at this exhibit F20, again on the bottom of the hotel, which is the east side of the site here, that's what we're referring to as the front parking lot,
Yes.
right? And that's got about 1/3 of the stalls, as I think was also discussed yesterday.
Yes.
And then above it is the rear parking lot with 2/3 of the stalls that has access from Ridgetop Boulevard or from the Credit Union Drive aisles.
That's right.
And so what you've said, what we're talking about in the trips generated by the hotel per hour, that includes trips entering as well as trips leaving from the Ridgetop Boulevard driveway.
Correct.
And it also includes trips entering from and leaving from the Myrie Road entrance.
Correct.
And in the same way, it includes trips entering from and leaving from both the front and the rear parking lots.
That's correct.
And so for the trips that are going to or coming from the rear parking lot, what is going to be the most convenient, access for them to use?
Yeah, so I think I said this, but I appreciate the opportunity to explain it before. I think of a vehicle that is, let's just say, a vehicle that is exiting or leaving the back parking lot. If they want to go north, south, or east to wherever they're headed to a destination, any direction but west, if they're leaving, my expectation is that they will utilize the direct route through the site directly to Ridgetop Boulevard because it's going to be faster for them to get north, south, or east by getting right onto the street system than it is to circulate slowly around the building. So, I think that's going to be the primary route for exiting vehicles. But some of those vehicles who do need to or want to travel west, or maybe they might, I want to acknowledge that there may be some vehicles that choose not to go out into ridge top and some may circulate around. I think there's a proportion of those that may. I'm trying to acknowledge that there is some of those vehicle trips that may want to travel that way.
Yep. And so, with apologies for jumping between graphics, Mr. Trem, maybe I will just, I guess I reorient this graphic. Maybe I'll try it that way. So I've rotated exhibit F20 so that north is now up. And so is what you're saying, Mr. Schramm. I guess first, for vehicles coming to the site and wishing to park in the rear entrance, vehicles coming east on Ridge Top will be able to turn right directly into that driveway, correct?
Vehicles coming from the west will be
Coming
able to
from the
turn right.
west, heading east. Yep. And then for vehicles leaving the rear parking lot, would turning right out of the driveway on Ridge Top enable them, without, convoluted movements, to go north or south on Myrie or continue further east on Ridge Top?
That's correct.
But they would not be able to turn left and head west on Ridge Top.
That's also correct.
So in a sense, that driveway is limited for arriving vehicles to one direction, and then conversely, for leaving vehicles, they could go in quite a number of directions.
Correct.
And so, how does that affect your estimation of how many vehicles entering or leaving from the rear parking lot would be able to utilize the ridgetop entrance?
Well, for what I said and just your clarification on movements, it's for those reasons of restriction and what they can and can't do exiting and entering that I would estimate that about half of the trips in the back would circulate around the credit union.
And so, on the other hand, half of the vehicles in the back would not need to circulate because they would be able to enter or exit via ridgetop.
That's correct.
And those two halves of these two-thirds of vehicles parking there each represents about one-third of the total vehicles parked
That's correct.
or the total trips. And then for the trips accessing the site via the Myrie driveway, what you said is some of them will be able to park in that front parking lot. Is that right?
Yes. In fact, some of them, like I said, a third of the parking's available. And my prior testimony was that if you're arriving to the site from Myrie and there's an available stall in the front of the hotel, I think some guests would park there out of convenience.
And then would you expect also that some guests will access the front parking lot from the Myrie entrance, park in a parking stall in the front, or go in and check in and then move their vehicle around to the rear parking lot and so circulate through the credit union for that reason?
Yeah, I think there would be two reasons for someone to circulate who's entering Myrie around the credit union. One is the example you provided, which was a check-in. Someone might choose to, if there's a check-in stall, but then there's little or no other parking that's right in front of the hotel. Based on a conversation at the counter, they might choose to then repark their car in the back. I was just going to finish my thought here. The other maneuver that I think would be a returning guest. And to be fair, there are, as I mentioned before, there's going to be a fair number of returning guests. If they are entering the site from Myrie Road and they're used to parking in the back and that's, where they have parked, that vehicle would also, if they're coming from Myrie and want to park in the back, if they're not coming from the west, traveling eastbound and coming from another direction, I would expect some of those guests would also circulate around the credit union to park in the back.
Okay. And going back to the checking in guests, I think you mentioned this, Mr. Schramm, but does the nature of this hotel as an extended stay hotel, what effect would that have on the number of guests checking in and circulating on a given day?
Yeah, so the IT manual doesn't help us in this regard to estimate the number of check-ins, but I can go based on my professional experience, knowing and having seen the other WoodSpring Suites hotels in Western Washington, and understanding the many of their hotel guests are extended stay. My expectation is that the number of check-in stalls would be minimal, maybe two or three, and that they won't be used as frequently as other hotels that have a lot higher turnover.
And is that because just when guests, when the average length of stay is longer, there's less turnover, and so fewer guests checking in on a particular day
That's
than
right. Yeah.
type of hotel? And then I think we also heard some testimony yesterday that the stalls in front are likely to be occupied, or at least some of them are likely to be occupied with users or employees of the credit union and the office buildings. Have you considered that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, obviously those, excuse me, those stalls that are sort of both. Let me just say it this way. If in the in a scenario that was described yesterday, if the credit union is at a peak time where there's a lot of parking on the east side of the credit union, those stalls that you see that are either adjacent to the hotel that are on the, I guess, the west side of the drive aisle, or there's what is that, eight or 10 stalls that are on the drive aisle that are on the east side of the drive aisle. I would expect that there may be times that those stalls are used by credit union, either employees or their clients.
And have you, how does that factor into your prediction that less than half of trips generated by the hotel will need to circulate through the credit union?
Yeah, good question. It factors in, and it still is in the, I still think it puts me in a place where I still think a third to half is still what I would estimate. And again, the reason for that is because we know that from the hourly parking demand review of a limited service hotel, the peak parking demand for a limited service hotel between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. I think is roughly between 25 and 30, maybe a little bit more than 30. So the parking demand for the hotel is lower during the day. And so there's less need for parked cars for the hotel to, not less need. There is less demand for hotel parking in the front. And so for that reason, I would expect that, those stalls would be open and available for credit union. And so if there is a hotel guest that's entering the site and they can't find a parking spot for the hotel because it's being used by hotel guests or credit union, I would expect that some of those, the result of that would be some of the hotel guests returning if it's between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. would then need to circulate around and find parking in the back.
And so, getting back to that overall prediction of less than half of trips, is it fair to summarize that, Mr. Schramm, as a combination of the approximately one third of total trips from the rear parking lot that you were describing earlier, plus the additional circulation from people accessing the hotel via Myri that you were most recently describing?
Yes.
And then, I guess, anything else you'd like to say about how you reached that conclusion before we talk about how you applied it?
No, I mean, I expect, there may be some questions from others that I can explain, but I think that generally is the methodology that I use and my team use to do our best to estimate the existing condition of the driveways and how I believe the site will function.
Great. So then looking back at page 6 of Exhibit B5, can you talk about how you reached this statement near the bottom of circulating vehicles, about one vehicle every 4 to 7 minutes?
Yes. So this is a practice that I've used based on my 30 years of experience, especially in hearings and when I'm in front of, even just general land use hearings and appeal hearings, is to try to understand that traffic engineering isn't, it's obvious to me, but not maybe to the average person. So I try to break this down into a quantifiable or understandable metric, or someone that's the common, someone can relate to. And so the math is as simple as this. If I take 17 to 28 of the trips that are generated per hour by the hotel during the credit union hours, and my estimate is that half of those, let's just say half of them, will need to circulate and will be circulating around the credit union, right? That's 8.5 or 9 trips an hour to 14. Well, 14 trips an hour is about one car every 4 minutes. Okay. Eight is about 7 minutes. So, to say that The imp, so to simply state or establish the concern that the hotel will generate vehicles around the credit union, therefore that's significant or it's unsafe. I think we first have to understand how many cars, how many trips are we talking about? And so what I've done here is I try to make this relatable to what is it going to feel like and look like if you're, if you're in that area. And what it's going to feel and look like is one additional car, hotel generated during the credit union hours, only one additional car every 4 to 7 minutes.
Thank you. And so I think you said this clearly, but just to make sure, what you said is 28 trips an hour, which is the maximum that you're predicting during business park hours. Half of that would be 14, and then 14 trips over 60 minutes is approximately one vehicle every 4 minutes for
Yes.
the more frequent end of this estimate.
Yes, that's again approximating here.
And since that's fully half of the generated trips, is that more circulation than you actually expect?
I think that frequency is slightly more than what I would expect. It's probably, if I were to say it's less than half, then it's probably more like 5 to 8 minutes.
And we're going to talk, Mr. Schramm, in a moment, about what's happening when those vehicles are actually circulating. But just while we're here on the numbers, if you were to assume that not half of the 28 trips, but all of those 28 trips generated from 4 to 5 p.m. were circulating through the hotel parking lot, what frequency of vehicles would that result in?
Well, if all of them, and I strongly believe that not all of them will, but just for the sake of your question and argument, if all 28 trips in an hour, and this is just during the peak hour, 4 to 5, then the math is pretty simple. 28 trips in an hour is about one car every 2 minutes.
Based on, and again, we'll go into this more in a moment, but if it were one vehicle every 2 minutes, would that change your conclusion that hotel trips circulating on the around the credit union would not cause a significant impact as far as safety and circulation?
In my professional opinion, one car every 2 minutes, and that's a very conservative high estimate. I believe it's going to be greater than that. But even one car every 2 minutes that is circulating within an existing parking lot that is able to accommodate, these types of vehicle trips, one additional car every 2 minutes, I would not consider to be a significant adverse impact.
Thank you. So, Mr. Schramm, I guess what I want to ask you next, sorry, I'm just moving a couple things around because we've covered them. I want to walk through the hotel parking, the I'm sorry, the credit union parking lot. So I want to go back to exhibit B10.
Let me interrupt just briefly just to check on time because we're going to have to take a lunch break at a certain point. About how much more time for direct?
I would say at least 30 minutes, possibly more.
Okay. So what are the parties feeling? Do we want to break now or wait the maybe closer to one?
I'm okay to break now, but okay, either way.
Does the witness have a preference, Mr. Schramm?
I prefer to take a break now.
Okay, all right.
Just
And the
it's
clerk agrees with you, so she's
okay, good.
yeah.
Glad.
So let's go ahead and do that. Do you all want a full hour today, or do you, as 45 minutes, would that suffice?
I'm okay with 45 minutes, if that's all right with Mr. Schramm.
Okay, all
That
right.
works
Let's
for
do
me.
45. So 120, rough. That's when we'd said, all right. Okay, we'll reconvene at 120 then.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
All right, we are adjourned until 120.